I'm Jake Sherman.
And I'm Darren Davidson.
And this is Kootenai Morning. Well, the year is 2050 here in the West Kootenai's 9 communities rely on 100% renewable energy. It may sound like a futuristic, almost sci-fi goal. The draft for that goal has been in the works for years, and finally, last month it was published. David Reed, the Renewable Energy Engagement Director of the West Kootenai Eco Society, is with us this morning. David, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, thanks for and thanks for joining us. So 9 communities participated, including Nelson, the RDCK, Castlegar, Caslow, New Denver, Roslyn, Silverton, Slocan, and Warfield. Is there anyone else you'd like to see included, and why is it so important to work on this as a united front?
Well, absolutely. We'd love to have all the communities of the West Kootenai involved, including Trail, Creston, Nacusp, Creston-Salmo, and beyond. Obviously, beyond the West Kootenai. And that's part of why we're doing this is as a pilot, and one of the parts of the project is to develop a playbook so other regions can duplicate this kind of effort and move toward 100% renewable energy from a local level. And that's really where I think the power of this plan comes into play. Local governments and local people have a lot of potential to influence how much carbon pollution we're putting into the atmosphere and how effectively we can move toward 100% renewable energy.
Dave, tell us a little bit about the 4 big moves, transportation, heating and cooling, electricity, and waste management. Give us a little more detail on each of those 4 important categories.
Sure, Darren. Yeah, so I think the way the plan is set up is the plan is set up to help local governments address the carbon pollution and the energy that's used at a community level. So that's the energy that's used in transportation, so how we get around every day, buildings, so how we heat and cool our houses and workplaces, organic waste, which is, deals with the waste that goes to the landfill from our kitchens and compost piles, and then finally in renewable energy itself, how are we generating more local renewable energy so that we can promote economic strength and resilience.
Mm-hmm. So, David, in 2017, The Guardian reported that 100 companies were responsible for 71% of global greenhouse gas emissions since 1988. That report was followed up last year by saying that 20 companies around the world are responsible for 35% of energy-related emissions. Why focus on changes in our regional community, and what impact are you projecting on a local and in a larger scale?
It's a great question. And the reality is this plan does not address those emissions from companies, partly because local governments have very little ability to influence those companies. So we're working with the tools that we have in the place that where we live so that we can make the change that we can make. And part of the vision of this is that we're helping to create a culture of renewable energy. So moving people away and governments away from fossil fuel dependence means also eventually creating the conditions that will allow us to move all of industry and other companies away from fossil fuels as well.
Some pretty big challenges, David, for making the switch to renewables. What are some of those that are particular to the Kootenais, and how do you plan to overcome them?
Well, I think actually it's not as challenging as we think. We need to get started right away, and it's really critical that we do so because it has such a big impact on the health, safety, and economic strength of our communities. And there's a lot of actually low-hanging fruit in terms of making it easier for people and cheaper and faster to switch to renewable energy in their homes, in their transportation options. And I think as we, you know, as the technology especially advances both for heating and cooling buildings and for electrified transportation, I think we're going to find that people actually want those things and prefer those things because they actually are more comfortable. It's more comfortable to live in a house that's well-insulated and energy-efficient and cheaper to heat and cool. People prefer to spend less money generally on that. And same with electric vehicles. I think, you know, if you've had the opportunity to drive an electric car, they're great to drive. They're very low maintenance in the long run. And people are going to prefer that. And as our provincial government and, frankly, governments right around the world, especially California, start to regulate and mandate that manufacturers produce electric vehicles, we're going to see more and more of them available on the market at lower and lower prices so that it becomes a real viable and attractive option for people. Keep in mind that we're talking about a 30-year time span here.
Right.
So just in the next 5 years, I think we're going to see a lot of transition. I think we've already, a lot of us, seen the proliferation of electric bikes. And I think that's something that most of us didn't really see coming 5 years ago. So
it's true. Yeah.
To say what 5 years from now is going to look like.
Yeah.
To get back to your question about the challenges, I think a couple of the big ones are we don't have a timeline yet for switching to electric commercial vehicles. And that includes pickup trucks, vans, and SUVs. Those are considered light commercial vehicles.
Right.
So the province hasn't committed to a time frame for transitioning those to zero emissions requirements. And then natural gas is another big factor. A lot of homes in our and buildings in our area are heated with natural gas because it is more cost effective in many cases than electricity has been historically. And we don't have a suitable replacement for natural gas that doesn't create some of the toxic problems in terms of health, as well as some of the greenhouse gas and climate change impacts that natural gas does. So I think those are two of our biggest challenge areas.
You mentioned earlier, just a few minutes ago, Dave, the almighty buck, right? Some people think that the price tag on projects like this and all it requires are a deterrent. How much money, realistically, will this 30-year plan cost? Have you crunched any big numbers over short-term or long-term?
We have not crunched numbers for that, partly because it's hard to predict what the cost of these changes might be. So, for example, most of these actions are about what local governments can do to make it faster, easier, and cheaper for individuals to choose renewable options. So if the local government, for example, adds more bus stops and that helps people take transit more often, or adds more bike lanes, or creates incentives in the building code to make it easier to switch to renewable energy for homes, it's impossible to gauge the uptake of that, and it's also hard to estimate the cost. So I think the bottom line is that it is definitely going to cost money, and that's a reality that each of these local governments is going to have to work through and find ways to implement as they go through their all of the other things that local governments do. But at the same time, it also gives an opportunity for us as local residents to say, yes, this is a priority for me.
Right.
And this is something that is important to the future of my family and my lifestyle and my community. So it's worth making that a priority as our local governments do their annual budgeting.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, what about those who can't afford a car, much less a new non-fossil fueled car? With the housing crisis in our region, many people don't own the house they live in and don't have a say in the energy sources it uses. What can those people do to help?
Well, one of the things they can do is they can support this plan, because this plan is about making, like I said, for local governments to make it faster, easier, and cheaper for people who own the buildings to make those upgrades. And that's definitely an important consideration, is we would like to see the renters also benefit from renewable energy in terms of having the cost savings and the health improvements. And so creating some policies that make those ripple effects felt is important. And again, one of the beautiful things about renewable energy is that in the long term, it is usually more cost effective than the fossil fuel equivalent. So, for example, putting solar panels on your house, which understandably not everyone can afford up front, but pay themselves off within 12 years, and then you have many years of service where you're just recouping more than you would have spent. Same with electric vehicles, same with energy efficiency in your home. So that's one of the opportunities that we have, is for local governments to leverage federal and provincial funding to help people afford those kinds of changes. So, for example, right now, the Clean BC program, which is the provincial program that is really driving a lot of the climate change policy, they have, as part of the COVID recovery funding, they have a double rebate program. So previously, I think the rebate for switching to a heat pump from electric baseboards, for example, was $2,000. Right now, up until the end of the year, it's $4,000. They have a rebate one of the rebates they have is for switching your natural gas-powered water heater to an electric water heater. They have a rebate to help you pay for the electrical upgrade of your home that you may need. So there's a lot of opportunities out there, and we hope that both renters and homeowners and building owners can see that, whether a building owner lives in the building or not, going to save them money in the long run by having a more efficient heating system.
So what's next, David? It feels like we often see big plans like this get tabled. How are you going to make it happen?
Well, I'd say there's never been a plan tabled in our region quite like this one. regardless, the next step is we have a series of webinars that are happening right now. We have one tonight for areas A, B, and C was Monday. Today is H, I, J, and K. So the Regional District of Central Puget is one of the participants, and so we're trying to cover the entire region with webinars and meetings. Mm-hmm. So tonight we have a public meeting for those areas, and then we have a series of public meetings. You can find the whole calendar of them on our website, westkootenayrenewableenergy.ca. We also have a survey that's up right now that'll be up until November 20th, and we're encouraging people to take that survey to help local governments understand what community members' priorities are, what they think is most feasible, what they think will have the highest impact in the short term. And then local governments need to adopt the plan and start implementing. And that's where West Kootenay Eco Society can, once again, play an important role in helping local governments move forward with the plan and collaborate with each other to share resources and information, and also to hold their feet to the fire. These nine governments have pledged to reach 100% renewable energy by 2050, and it's our community's opportunity and obligation to make sure that that actually happens.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Dave Reed from the West Kootenay Eco Society. Just a couple more quick questions, David, and we'll let you go. Any idea quickly how many people have downloaded the draft? And I wanted to ask you another quick question, a light topic about the U.S. election, but you can answer the first easy question.
No, I haven't checked our download numbers yet. A lot of the information about the plan is just available on the website without downloading the plan. The plan itself is a bit of a read,
right.
But there are summaries for each community, and I do encourage people to attend those webinars. Even if you can't attend the webinars, all the webinars will be recorded and posted on the website so you can watch it later at your own convenience. And also, if you're like me, watch it at 1.5 times speed so you can get through it. So that's an option for people to learn more about the plan. And, of course, we encourage people to contact their local governments with questions. You can also contact the collaboration by email. The email is available on the website. Again, it's westkootenayrenewableenergy.ca. And as far as the U.S. election goes, we don't know yet.
Well, I was going to ask you though. You know, for like political momentum is so important for movements of any sort, whether you're pro or anti. Our Liberal government is clearly got a big green plan, and the New Democrats, same sort of thing provincially. How important is the outcome of the U.S. election to the momentum that the renewable and just environmental movement in general has, not only in North America but around the world?
Well, you know, I think it's an interesting question. I think I don't think the movement will stop, and I think one of the key components of this plan is one of the reasons that we actually developed this process is because we recognize that sometimes we don't get the leadership that we need at the federal level or at the provincial level. So the more that we can take action in our own hands, in our own places, the more effective we can be. We can start creating this movement right across the country and across the world. I think there are over 150 local governments now right around the world that have made this pledge to 100% renewable energy by 2050. So I think that's one of the key pieces is we're building this movement from the ground up. And one of the beautiful things about local government is these are people that you know. The people who are making these decisions are people that you know and live with and you see around your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to interact with those people and let those people know how you feel and let them know how important it is that we make this transition not only for, you know, the environment, but for our own health and safety.
Right.
We know that global warming is already having impacts on the places that we know and love, whether it's wildfires or droughts or what have you. We want to make this place livable for our children and our grandchildren. So that means taking action as soon as possible.
So keep the heat on those local and provincial politicians,
well,
no pun intended.
And support the ones that are doing a great job. We have, you know, nine local governments that have signed onto this pledge, and that means that they've seen the importance of this plan and this work, and they're ready to move ahead with it.
Well, important work. If you're just tuning in, we've been speaking with David Reed from the West Kootenay Eco Society, who's been telling us about the draft plan for getting the West Kootenay region on 100% renewable energy by 2050. You can read the full draft at westkootenayrenewableenergy.ca. David, thanks for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Have a great day.
Thanks, David.
Bye.